We stopped last time. He is speaking of our human thought, which has forgotten its high status of origin. And what does it do? In glamorous passages of half-veiled light, wandering, a brilliant shadow of itself, this quick, uncertain leader of blind gods, wandering in obscure, half-veiled passages, half-lit passages, which are attractive, and a brilliant shadow of its own self. This mind, which is an uncertain, not sure of itself, leader of blind gods. Blind gods are the senses. The senses that serve the human being. This tender of small lamps, not adequate lamps, but it throws small lights here and there. This minister serve, hired by a mind and body for earth use. This mind, this thought, is truly a minister, but he is treated as a serf, serving mind and body for earth use, earthly use. And in the course of this work, it forgets its work mid crude realities, mid the gross and crude realities facing it. This thought forgets its true mission. But when the higher intimations come, when the memory steals from a lost heaven of truth, as mentioned earlier, a wide release comes and a glory calls. It recovers its renounced imperial right. At this visitation from above, our thought recovers its own imperial right. It wears once more its purple robe of thought, purple red glittering robe of thought, and knows itself the ideals seer and king, not a mere minister, serf, a leader, uncertain leader of blind gods, but seer and king of the ideal, communicant and prophet of the unborn. The true function of this thought is to communicate what is still unborn and to announce beforehand as a prophet the coming of the unmanifest heir to delight and immortality. This thought, when it discharges its rightful function, it is an heir. It inherits delight and immortality. All things are real, that here are only dreams. And that plane where this thought is active, what are dreams here at our level are real there. In our unknown depths sleeps the reserve of truth, things that are only dreams, they have the reserve of truth, potential of truth, and that potential lies, sleeps, untapped in our unknown depths. They sleep in our unknown depths, but on our unreached heights, they reign, they rule, and come to us in thought and muse, trailing the ropes of light. Our dreams have their own sway on the heights above, and they come to us in rare moments in the form of thought, in the form of muse, poetry, trailing their robes of light. As they go, as they come, behind them the robes of light follow, their gowns of light drag on. Still, but our dwarf will and cold pragmatic sense admit not the celestial visitants. These visitants from high on are not admitted by our puny will and cold, calculating, pragmatic sense. Pragmatic sense is measuring everything from the point of view of its practical utility, not from the point of view of its inherent value, whether it is useful at the moment or not. If a thing has true value in itself, that is cherished. But where it is a pragmatic mind, everything is measured in terms of its utility, awaiting us on the ideal peaks, on the heights, or guarded in our secret self unseen. Either they are guarded in the realms of our secret self, or they await us on the peaks, on the summits of the ideal mind. Yet flash sometimes across the awakened soul. Still, in moments of awakening, these truths, these potentials are flashed across the eye, and they hide from our lives their greatness, beauty, power, because we measure everything in terms of utility. And therefore, they hide from our profane eyes their inherent greatness, characteristic beauty, and innate power. Our present feels sometimes their regal touch. Our present existence sometimes feels their royal touch. And our future strives towards their luminous thrones. Our future struggles to reach there where the luminous thrones of these ideals are situated. Out of spiritual secrecy they gaze, immortal footfalls in mind's corridor sound. They look at us from the spiritual secrecies, and in the corridors of our mind there are the footfalls of the immortal. Only we may not be attentive, and on such moments our souls can climb into the shining plains. He doesn't say our minds. Our souls can climb into the shining plains. The breadths from which they came can be our home. These truths, which come from high altitudes, from the vast vistas, they can be our home. Not only plains inaccessible, remain inaccessible plains forever, and then he speaks of Ashwapati, who is ascending in these plains, his privilege regained of shadowless sight. He has regained his privilege of seeing without a shadow, seeing without accompanied by obscurity. The thinker entered the immortal's air and drank again his pure and mighty source. That is what Ashwapati does. Immutable, in rhythmic calm and joy, he saw, sovereignly free in limitless light, the unfallen plains. Ashwapati sees the plains which have not yet descended, immutable, unmoving, in rhythmic calm and joy. Very difficult for our human conception that calm and joy can be exist simultaneously in a rhythmic manner. Because when we have calm, joy disturbs. And where joy is there, calm is very difficult to establish. But on those unfallen plains, there is this immutable rhythm of calm and joy. He sees them, the thought-created worlds, the worlds created by pure thought, where knowledge is the leader of the act, where the knowledge of truth leads action, and matter is of thinking substance made. Even in these thought worlds, there is a matter. It is a speciality of Sri Aurobindo's philosophy that matter is not of one kind. If there are seven planes of existence, there are seven grades of matter, each grade subtler than the lower one. And the material matter, the physical matter, is very gross, concrete, inert. But the higher you grow, matter changes its character and it becomes subtler and subtler. So, in these thought worlds, matter thinks. Matter is made of a substance which thinks by itself. You do not have to impose thought on matter, as we have to do here. And matter is of thinking substance made. Knowledge is the leader of the act. Matter is of thinking substance. Feeling and the faculty of feeling, a heaven bird poised on dreaming wings, heaven bird free, poised towards the heaven on dreaming wings, not clamped to the material ground. And such a feeling answers truth's call as to a parent's voice. Feeling always is in tune with truth. It regards truth as the parent. And any intimation from truth is responded to by this feeling as to a parent's voice. This is what he describes, that they are to be achieved in yoga. Knowledge is the leader of the act. Matter is of thinking substance. Feeling answers truth call to as to a parent's voice. Form luminous leaps from the all-shaping beam. All-shaping beam, the beam of light, the beam of consciousness, it has a power to create forms. And from this all-shaping beam, he sees luminous forms leaping from that beam. And will is a conscious chariot to the gods. Willpower is a conscious chariot to the gods. That means it is the chosen vehicle of the gods to effectuate their purpose. And life, spoken of form, spoken of feeling, spoken of will, and life, a splendor stream of musing force. Life there is a stream of splendor, stream of musing force, force that is contemplating, force that is dwelling upon itself, upon some truth in itself. And life, a splendor stream of musing force, carries the voices of the mystic suns. The waves of life are full of the voices of the mystic suns, not the physical sun, but the spiritual suns. A happiness it brings of whispered truth. Where this life flows, there is a gentle happiness of a truth in whisper, not loudly proclaiming itself. There runs in its flow, when that happiness flows, honeying the bosom of space. It's a beautiful expression. A happiness it brings of whispered truth. There runs in its flow, honeying the bosom of space. The whole space is picturized as a bosom. And in that, this flow of happiness brought by life acts as a honey. it coats the whole bosom with the honey of this felicity. A laughter from the immortal heart of bliss. There is a honeyed laughter coming from the immortal heart of bliss. When bliss is full, it laughs. And the unfathomed joy of timelessness. There is no passage or compulsion of time, but there is a timelessness on this plane, and that timelessness carries and exudes its own joy. The sound of wisdom's murmur in the unknown. There is a lot to be known. Even there you know, feel that so much to be unknown. So much yet unknown. Even there you sense the murmur of wisdom. It is not a zero, it is not a blank, but there is a murmur of wisdom and the breath of an unseen infinity. You do not see infinity there, but the breath of infinity you experience. These are all things which Ashwapati experiences one after the other. In gleaming clarities of amethyst air, the chainless and omnipotent spirit of mind brooded on the blue lotus of the idea. Blue lotus, to indicate its divine nature. Blue, divine spiritual consciousness. So the idea is compared to a blue lotus because of its spiritual origin. And on that, this omnipotent, chainless spirit of mind broods, charging it with its own power in gleaming clarities of amethyst air, that is transparent air. Around there is no grossness, there is no obscurities, and in that air the spirit of mind brooded on the blue lotus of the idea. A gold supernal sun of timeless truth. There is an eternal truth which shines as a sun. It is a gold supernal sun, not the earthly sun or the terrestrial sun, but transcendent and gold. Gold, as we know, always stands for truth, the divine truth. Poured down the mystery of the eternal ray. That sun pours down the secret of the eternal light, ray of light, through a silence. That flow of the sun is through a silence quivering with the word of light, word of light, word, mantra. It is Rik, is the illumined word. So word of light is this inspired utterance on an endless ocean of discovery. Everyone there is launched on an endless ocean of discovery of new truths. And as he looks up, far off he saw the joining hemispheres. the lower hemisphere and the upper hemisphere joining, Ashwapati is able to see the joining of these parardha and aparardha on meditations, mounting, edge of trance. In meditation, there is a mounting movement leading to trance. Great stairs of thought climbed up to unborn heights. Each thought leads to another, not dispersed as in our case, but each climbing to this next one. Great stairs of thought climbed up to unborn heights. Where time's last ridges touch eternity's skies, where the last borders of time touch the skies of eternity. That is, where time loses itself into the eternal. And nature speaks to the spirit's absolute. Prakriti speaks to the Purusha. Spirit's absolute, you can't define what it is. But at that level, nature speaks, that is, communes directly with its Lord, with the Spirit. On meditations, mounting edge of trance, great stairs of thought climbed up to unborn heights, where time's last ridges touch eternity's skies, and nature speaks to the spirit's absolute. This is the last vision that Ashwapati sees far off. I think we can stop there.